said, my name is Stacy Bright. I'm at Space Telescope Science Institute in Baltimore, Maryland. My collaborators are Ursula DeMarco at Macquarie University and her PhD student, Daniel McDonald. And other collaborators is Eric Lagadec at the OCA and also Olivier Chenot at OCA, but I'm sad to say he passed away in 2014, but the work that he's done is still greatly part of this research, so I want to make sure I include him here. So now we're going back from the young stars, now back to evolved stars. The overarching question of this research is, what is causing these beautiful, fantastic shapes on the planetary nebula stage of the HR diagram? So we see this spherical AGB mass loss, and then something happens, and then bam, we have bipolar nebula, we have axisymmetric nebula, we have an elliptical planetary nebula. So what we're looking at is what's really driving these different shapes. So why would we study the disks inside, assuming there are disks inside of these planetary nebulas? Well, there's a lot of different scenarios to describe what the formation engine is. So you have single stars with magnetic fields that are rotating versus binary star systems. And if it is a binary star system, is it short or long period binaries? So if we look at disks inside of these PN, and we look at the size and the shape, if it's compact and small, then it's likely a short period binary. If it's more expanding and toroidal, then it's maybe a long period binary. We can also look at the chemical composition, seeing is it made of silicates, amorphous carbon, what's the age of it, and so on. So there are disks that are found inside of planetary nebula. I just put two up here, CPD-568032 and M229. The typical PN, I would say, that are found to have disks inside, the inner radius is about at 100 AU. So there's dual dust chemistry. Some are oxygen-rich, some carbon-rich. There are some longer period binaries found, and the masses are about 10 to the negative 3, 10 to the negative 6 solar masses. There are some other PN that have more compact disks with maybe inner radiuses of, 5 to 10 AU. But there's been some new studies, for instance, by Parker and Frew, saying that a lot of those are actually mimics. So I'm going to go ahead and say that these are our typical PN, understanding that there are different disks found in PN. As I said before, we have to look in between the two stages, so we're going to go to the post-AGB stage where it's just starting there. And we classify two different groups on the post-AGB. We're going to talk about naked post-AGB objects and then pre-planetary nebula. So when I say naked post-AGBs, what I mean is an AGB star that's been classified as an AGB from its SED, but there is no reflection nebula there. And then the pre-planetary nebula does have reflection nebula. So the post-AGB, the stars are actually the same, and it's kind of up to question why some have the reflection nebula and the others don't. So looking first to the naked post-AGB objects, these have been studied extensively with the VLTI and, high-resolution imaging, and a lot of disks have been found, and these are smaller, more compact disks. Like I say here, 15 AU, and a bit more massive, the dust masses to 10 to the negative 2 solar masses. Because there is no reflection nebula around it, we hypothesize that these disks, possibly due to accretion, have stalled the post-AGB stars on the HR diagram, and the nebula dissipates, and these are never going to become PN. The disks are in Kepler orientation, they're older, and they have these strong silicate features. The preplanetary nebula, these are the ones that have a reflection nebula, they're a lot less studied. The SEDs do have this double peak, so we imagine that, there's a detached shell there, but there's not really been a lot of studies done on looking for disks. A lot of them also aren't found to have binaries. If they do, they're longer order, 6 to 22 years. And we really think that if we look for disks inside of the pre-planetary nebula, that these will be the disks that are going to unlock the mechanism that are shaping the planetary nebula. So between 2012 to 2014, we did a small survey of pre-planetary nebula that we chose because they have a bright unresolved core, and we think that there could be a disk inside. They're all classified as post-AGBs from the SEDs. And when we started, there was no confirmed binaries, but then while we were doing these observations, other observations showed that IRAS 08005 possibly has a binary. So we try to choose a range of morphologies from bipolar to elliptical and different inclinations to make sure that we're, you know, being able to actually see the disk is not completely obscured. We've already had a couple of talks today on the VLTI and how the interferometer works, so I won't go into too much detail, but we did observations in the mid and the near infrared, so we did get that high resolution. And this is just a little bit of explaining about the visibility curve and looking for that sinusoidal pattern if there is a disk there, and that's kind of the key that we're looking for in our VLTI observations. So I will start out just with two kind of prototype disks that we found. One is in IRAS 16279, and this is a kind of a complex axisymmetric nebula. It has intermediate inclination, and we were able to get 12 baselines. And I don't know if you can see that from where you are, but we weren't able to get as good UV coverage as the last talk. That was tons of UV coverage. We had very limited sampling, so we tried to choose our baselines so that they were perpendicular to each other and also perpendicular to where we thought the disk was so that we could measure along the major and the minor axis of the disk. We ran some MC3D models, so this radiative transfer modeling using DUSTY. We both used the visibilities and the SEDs that we got from MIDI and also from AMBER, which I won't go into the AMBER here, just looking at MIDI. And there is a lot of free parameters that go into DUSTY, as everyone knows from these codes. So we had the main ones we were trying to constrain was the inner radius of the disk. The outer radius was much harder to constrain. The dust mass, the chemical composition. And so there's a very light yellow line across the visibility, which is our final model, which you can't really see here. But what we're seeing is a ring-like disk made of amorphous carbon with an inner radius of about 60 AU. So this is very similar to those typical PN that I showed at the beginning, like CPD-56. So we kind of say that, okay, this is a preplanetary nebula that will continue to evolve on the HR diagram and become an ionized PN. The next one is IRAS 08005, and this one we were able to get 6 baselines of MIDI data. We didn't have any AMBER data. And this one is thought to have a companion simply due to losing mass at quite a significant rate. And there is a dual dust chemistry in there, so we were hoping to find a disk. We ran again these Monte Carlo dusty models. And we also found evidence for a disk inside of 08005. And this one, on the other hand, looks a lot more like the naked post-AGBs. So we have an inner radius of 5 AU, but the mass is a little less massive than the other naked post-AGB stars, but it does have, it's made of silicate dust. So at this point, we say, okay, the disk looks like the disk around the naked post-AGBs, but it has a reflection nebula. So what is this one? So we hypothesize that it's what I call a crossover object, meaning that it's at the stage where it eventually will stall on the HR diagram, but for now we can see both. of the 8 that we surveyed, we found 4 that do have discs, and the discs that were detected were all in the bipolar and the multipolar nebula. And the ones that I have question marks next to, is there a disc, is there not a disc, those were all in the elliptical nebula. Now these ones, there could be a disc, but maybe it was just over-resolved by the interferometer, maybe we couldn't detect it. And there's one that I say is definitely not a disc there, it is most likely a stellar source in the center without a disc around it. So that's our sample of 8. As I mentioned before, there's a lot of free parameters in DUSTY. They're really hard to constrain, and sometimes it is hard to be impartial. I hate to say it, but there is sometimes a bit of artistic license being taken when you're doing this DUSTY modeling. So working with collaborator Daniel McDonald, the PhD student at Macquarie University, he's been working on really trying to develop a solution that's going to be, make sure we find the global minimum, it's repeatable, and it's an efficient solution. So he's been working on using a genetic algorithm to model these disks. And how the genetic algorithms work is basically it's kind of mimicking biological evolution, natural selection. So we start with the parents. We have these parents. They go through. They try to, you find the best fit. So survival of the fittest in this truest sense here. You know, how is the best chi-square? And then whichever parents are the best, then they breed. They have an offspring. Then there's mutations. And it goes on. And then you get a new iteration that happens. So this is how the genetic modeling works. So far, he's been able to do it successfully. We've recreated a model with known parameters. We do about 250 generations, and we run it about 50 times to make sure we have the best solution. So that's looking at about over 10,000 generations that we're doing. This is a lot of computational power, so you do need supercomputing for it. And I don't know all the details of how much he's getting, but we're taking about 3 weeks to do 50 times, and we're trying to get to at least 100 runs in order to get our good errors. But you can see in the bottom here, so this is our I made it go black. I don't know what to do. So the chi-squared, which one is the laser? Okay. The chi-squared is here, unless this is being the best down here. We have inner radius, distance, disk mask, temperature, and we have a lot of these parameters that we're constraining. So you can see here we're zooming in on a solution in these using these genetic models. So finally, really more of a summary, is that we can find disks inside preplanetary nebula. They're hard to find, but there's some out there, and I think that these are really driving the non-spherical morphologies. I think we should really try to get better models, and I hope these genetic algorithms will do that, and maybe use the few that we found as prototypes for the post-AGBOT objects. Thanks.
So questions?
Maybe I missed it, Stacy, but what is the velocity structure of the disks that you find in this pre?
Sorry, can you repeat?
What is the velocity structure of the disks?
The velocity structure?
Yeah.
So this part, we don't really have much data to constrain that, whether they're expanding or whether they're not expanding. So yeah, we don't have that information. We do have, flaring is one of our parameters, and so we're using that kind of as whether it's toroidal or more Keplerian, and the 08005 is has less flaring.
Eva.
When
And you talk about the naked poster UV objects. I mean, what kind of observational limits do you set? Do you have set on the nebulosity that is not there apparently?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I guess. Well, I had this Vizier survey, which these are part of them, that was done by Eric Lagadec, and he in there had a. I can't remember how many were in there, but he had classified all of them versus whether they had a nebula or whether they didn't have the nebula, and it seemed quite clear from that, but I can't tell you the specifics.
It's probably based on the observations of the Hubble and on the wide field camera, and those are detecting only very bright objects, so if you go deeper, you probably find nebula there. You just have to wait a little bit for the star to make it there and
to reflect.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah. And also, when there is an object in which you mention that you suggest that there might be a disk based on the dual chemistry, can you explain a little bit why you are making this connection?
This one here.
Mm-hmm.
So, in some of these, we'll have the amorphous carbon, but if it also has the silicate, then usually that means that the dust has been there longer in a stable Keplerian orbit for the silicate.
This is one possibility.
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry. And do you know for your targets if some of them are binaries or multiple stars, or you are sure that you have only single stars?
So we're not sure. Like I said, 08005 was just found to likely have a six-year binary in it. Now, would you consider that longer, short? I would probably say it's closer to the shorter period binary. The longer period binaries, it's much harder because, you know, you have to have so many years of observations to say for sure. There is one that has maybe a 20-year binary period.
Any other question? So from this list, and coming back to the first question you raised about the irregular shapes of the PN, so I'm not really convinced about the disk.
Yeah, I wish. Well, so what I wish was that we have a lot more to observe, and this is the part that we're trying to get to in the future, is having more observations with that you can use at this high spatial resolution. And that's why I'm hoping that, okay, we'll get more observations, but also if we can constrain the models better, then it can really tell us more. Because, like I said, some of these we have slight fringes, and so I can't say for sure if I think it is or I think it's not, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so we have a little bit of time because it is the last talk, so.
Yeah, so I'm so you detected disk in several cases. So I'm just curious. So here is a disk. It's the driving agent of the evolution from the spherical symmetry to asymmetry, or it's just kind of the result of the evolution of the star?
Well, if you have the disk, I mean, this is another question, whether you want to, then we start talking about jets and what's driving it there. I haven't done much research into that area. I know lots of people out here have, so. Does that answer the question?
Okay. So, thank you very much, Stacy.
Thank you.
And let's thank all the speakers of this session again. Okay.